I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. And we're about to get funky with a special rebroadcast. He played bass for James Brown and George Clinton's Parliament Funkadelic, all before striking out on his own. You know who I'm talking about, Bootsy Collins. We last talked with Bootsy about his latest album, The Funk Capital of the World. On it, he blends what's hot now, hip-hop beat, spoken word, even a little Latin flavor, with the classic soul and funk for which he is known around the world. And Bootsy began our conversation by telling us about the funk-inspired outfit he decided to wear for the interview.
Oh, today I'm pretty low-key. You know, I got, I don't even look at my outfits as kind of out there. It's just stuff that I just kind of put on, you know.
What you got on? I mean, you wearing some glasses? You got some colors?
Oh,
what's
yeah.
Happening?
You
what
know,
you got? What do you got?
I can't see without my star glasses, you know. I got to have those on. Got my top hat happening. Little black sparkles going on here and there.
See, that's
and,
what I'm talking about. So what's the inspiration for the album? You were saying it's good to get back out there. What inspired this?
Well, actually, I looked at this album as my whole musical biography. I wanted to express how important it was to have people in your life that inspired you. They say, where'd you get your funk from? Well, you know, James Brown, Jimi Hendrix, these were very important and influential people, not only to the world, but to me as I was coming up. My brother was number one, Phelps Catfish Collins, who was 8 years older than I. And I looked up to him because I didn't have a father in the home. So my brother was very important to me. And he played guitar. So that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a guitar player. So he was the first one to inspire me to do something with my life, and I'm so glad that he was there.
I want to talk a little bit more about your brother, and again, we lost him,
yes.
And I'm so sorry for your loss.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
hard to lose a sibling. But I wanted to ask, you've got some unconventional collaborations on this album. You've got Al Sharpton on the mic for a tribute to James Brown. That track is called Still the Man.
Still the Man.
Have to play it.
Please.
It's too hot.
This is Reverend Al Sharpton, James Brown, the godfather of soul. He was not just a hot entertainer. He was not just a prolific performer. He was a historic figure. He changed music as we know it. I remember when I used to speak sometime at his show, he would always smile. When I would say there were four B's in music, Bach, Beethoven, Brahms, and Brown.
The four B's.
Ain't it funky?
He goes on to preach.
Yes.
How did that come about? How did who approached who?
Well, actually, I knew Reverend Al from back in the day, but what inspired me to do this was when James Brown passed, you know, it was just a void. And we knew how important, you know, he was, and how important to us as black people James Brown is. And I didn't want that to die. And after hearing Reverend Al Sharpton do what he did at the funeral, it was like a no-brainer. I got to get him to do this over a JB's track. And he was as hyped to do it as I was. So when I asked him, he was like, what do you want me to talk about? And I told him exactly what he did at James Brown's funeral. That's all he has to do. And when he got the music, that's what he did. I mean, he didn't think about it. He didn't write it down. It was like it comes straight from the heart.
What many people
and that's
might,
what I wanted.
People might not remember that James Brown was a mentor to Reverend Al Sharpton as well.
Yes.
In fact, he wears his hair in tribute to James Brown. But this was a huge break for you, touring with his band. You were only 17 years old, as I recall. But you didn't stay long, in part because James Brown was known as such a tough taskmaster, and you clashed. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, it wasn't that we clashed so much. It was just, it was a lot of things that was going on during this time. You know, it was, the LSD thing was, you know, was coming on strong, and this peace and love thing is going on, and bands want to come up and do the wow thing. You know, it's a whole new generation coming in, and I'm a part of that. and I'm with James Brown, but I'm listening to Jimi Hendrix. So that kind of sparked the thing of, you know, I want to just be in a band and just, we can freak out and just do crazy stuff, you know?
So it's what they call now creative differences? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, because I needed the discipline that James Brown had to offer me. Because, like I said, I came up in a house with no father, and he, you know, he definitely was the godfather. He wanted to make sure he made that father impression on me, and he took it seriously. You know, I got lectured every night, which at that time was great because, I needed it.
Well, after that, you worked with George Clinton in Parliament Funkadelic. Who can forget that? What are you proudest of from that period? You have to know that some of the work from that period are still classics that have to be played at any party. If there's a party, it has to be played, or it is not a party.
Well, you know, it goes beyond music for me. I'm proudest for coming up in that time where we needed each other, where we had to play as a band, where we had to show up as a group, as a unit, regardless of our individuality, we were still family. And today, we're taught to do our own thing individually and given the tools to do it. The smartphones and the computer separates everybody. It makes you think that you don't need nobody else. I'm just glad to have come up in a time where I know I needed somebody else and I had to talk to somebody else. And, you know, it was like the real deal and not the dough, you know, meaning I could get in the car and rap to a chick, you know, and, you know, the next thing I know, I don't know what's going to be happening, but I'm going to give it my full funk ability, you know, and whatever happens, happen.
I see.
Wasn't no pre-programming, no pre-planning. The funk just, you know, just showed up, and whatever happened, happened.
Well, some of that, though, if you're talking about sex, though, some of that is HIV/AIDS. I mean, there are... Do you know what I mean? I don't know. You're not just talking about sex, but if in part what you're talking about, is that part of the thing is that doing whatever is deadly, right?
Well, you know, the fun part of it was actually trying to get the sex. You know, who had the best rap? Who had the game rap to get in there and get down? You know, that for us was and that came across in the records.
So that's been lost? Do you think that the art of the rap has been lost?
Yeah. Yes. Come on, please. I mean, everything is so in your face now. You know, it's like telling you exactly what I want. You know, what I liked about it was, you know, when the chick comes in and, you know, she ain't showing you all this and all of that, and you have to try to convince her that you need to come out of that. You know, that's funk. Today, she just walks in ready to get out. That ain't no fun. You know, we were looking forward to having some fun with it.
So the pursuit, you know, was the experience, the whole art of it
has been taken out of the game. Now it's like, okay, give me this and I'll see you later. Give me that, I'll see you later. It's all, you know, it's nothing there.
Maybe you should write a relationship book.
Maybe we should write it together.
Oh, I don't know. If you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. This is a special rebroadcast of my interview with Bootsy Collins, talking about his album, The Funk Capital of the World. You were saying earlier that one of the things that you liked about that era is that you realized you needed people. Is that partly why you've got so many collaborations on this? You've got, as we previously mentioned, Al Sharpton, but Dr. Cornel West is on it. Also, yeah. Ice Cube, Snoop Dogg, Chuck D.
And if you notice, all of the people that I do have respected voices in their era and in their arena of what they've done or what they're doing. For me, when I was growing up, we had these powerful voices in the community, which told us to be black was cool. Because before that, you know, it wasn't cool to be black. It wasn't cool to be funky. We didn't realize we liked being black until James Brown said, "Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud." Then we realized it's a good thing. But those type of things we're not getting now on the level that we need them because their programming is so heavy about everything else and all these other things distracting us. We're not realizing that we're being separated. When we was in the cotton fields and working together, sweating and singing, nobody else understood that. It's like, what the heck are they singing about? But we had faith, and we worked together. We did everything together. Now that's been taken away.
But is that so wrong, though? I mean, a lot of people work for that, to have the opportunity to live wherever they want, sing with whoever they want, however, whatever
kind. It's nothing wrong with it, but it becomes bad for you when you throw the baby out with the bathwater. You don't want to throw all that away and just play with yourself, because that's all you're doing is play with yourself when you get on the computer by yourself in your room. And even when you're traveling, you got your iPhone. Nothing's wrong with it. But when you're being completely separated from people and working with people, that's when it becomes bad for your health. And that's what we're talking about.
So you want to set an example by producing an album that has a lot of other voices on it, a lot of people on it, and showing how
that's
it can
showing.
Be done.
You know, it ain't really about me and this album. It's about spreading awareness now and hoping that we get some real talent and some wisdom with that real talent at an early age. And that's what I'm trying to get them to do. Love where they're at, love themselves, and be aware of who you are and your history. Go back and connect the dots. You know, you can even Google it, baby. You know, that's why I put on those things like if you check out the jazz greats on the tribute, I wanted them to Google up those names, because I know they don't know who, you know, Miles Davis, Thessalonious Monk, Wes Montgomery. They have no clue who these cats are that opened the door for us as musicians. And I want them to check that out.
One person who opened the door for you, helped open the door for you, was your brother, older brother Phelps, known as Catfish, whom we spoke of earlier. And you came up together, him on the guitar, you on the bass. And you have a track on the album called Don't Take My Funk. How did that work? Did he?
Well, actually, we had recorded that probably about 4, maybe 5 years ago.
Okay.
And I had recorded it for another project, another album, and of course I didn't have creative control, so it was like, this is a little bit too old for what we're trying to do. We're trying to make you new school. We're trying to make you commercial. So I went with it. I had committed myself, but at the same time, it was like, I knew that that wasn't really me. Mm. On this album, I got a chance to be me. I got a chance to bring who I wanted, who I felt the people needed to have hope in. I'm spreading hope like dope.
Okay.
And that's what this album is all about.
Well,
spreading hope.
All right, let's play a little bit of it before we let you go. Here it is. Nobody can take your funk away. That can't happen. That could not possibly happen. You know, before I let you go, I can't let you go without asking you, what is funk?
Funk is exactly what we've been talking about. Funk is the absence of any and everything you can think of, but the very essence of all that is. And saying that, I'm saying funk is anything that we create in our minds that we want to do, what we want to be, but we don't have the resources. We don't have the money to get these things. But it takes the belief. It takes your mama's prayers. It takes a community. It takes all of that to help build a mug's confidence in himself, because we've been tore down so much. It's like we don't even believe in ourselves no more. So it takes all of that. And that's what funk is. Funk is that driving force that you know is there when ain't nobody else there. And you can create the things you need. Give you a perfect example. I played guitar when I first got started because of my brother, Catfish. I wanted to be just like him. So the opportunity came where he needed a bass player. And I said, I'm the man. I can do it. It's like, you don't even have a bass. I said, well, if you can get me 4 strings, I will have a bass. And I made a bass out of that guitar. And that same bass that I played with him that night was the same bass that I played all the way up until we got with James Brown. That's funk, making something out of nothing.
All right.
And that's what we as people are known to do.
Well, you heard it from the master himself. That's what funk is. So
yes,
what should we?
Is.
So what should we go out on? We can play it. We have a Jimi Hendrix song. We got. We have Mirror Tell Lies. Want that?
Yeah.
Like that?
Hit us with some mirror.
All right. Mirror Tell Lies. That was a special rebroadcast of my conversation with legendary funk musician Bootsy Collins. We were talking about his album, The Funk Capital of the World, and he joined us from member station WABE in Atlanta.
Music has a lot of influence on a lot of young people today.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Happy Memorial Day. Let's talk more tomorrow.
Anything they want to do, it's up to themselves, with the right intention.
And when you know you got the strength, oh, you can carry on. You keep going and going and going until you go. Truth turns into love, and love turns into strength, but mirrors tell lies.
Matter of fact, what we're trying to stress also is, like, music should be done outside in a festival type of way, just like they do it anywhere else. And like if they can have more gigs like this in Harlem, you know, you can play outside, say for instance, 3 days. At the fourth day, you play half the day outside, for instance, and maybe the other time in the Apollo, you know, four shows or whatever, you know. And the idea of people really listening to music over the sky, you know, in such a large body.